We are in Matthew 18 this morning. Last Sunday in the sermon time, we talked about elders and the choosing of elders. Talked some about elders' ministry and what that is. Also talked a little bit just about process as we go through this time of discernment. And so I just encourage you to remember that next Sunday is when we will be giving out forms to people where you can suggest names for elders and also reconfirm our current elders. What I want to do this morning is I want to alter direction a little bit, and I want to look at the larger context of ministry, and that is the ministry of the whole congregation of God. And so let's begin in chapter 18, right at verse 1. Hear the word of the Lord. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, "Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world for temptations to sin. For it is necessary that temptations come, but woe to the one by whom the temptation comes. And if your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than with two hands or two feet to be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes to be thrown into the hell of fire. See that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I tell you that in heaven their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that never went astray. So it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish." Let's key in on two parts of the passage for a moment. If your hand or your foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it. How destructive sin is. How dangerous and corrupting. And the passage gets our attention, you know, asking us to see ourselves. If we want to save ourselves, we don't treat sin like it's no big deal. Take sin very seriously. If you care about your future, you will go to the utmost limits to keep sin out of your life. But we look a little closer at the passage and something kind of shifts in our understanding. Particularly when we read what leads into it, verse 6, where it says, "If a person causes one of these little ones to sin, it would be better for them to have a big stone hung around their neck and be thrown into the sea." That is the issue of sin being talked about. So it's not really thinking about me and my sin by myself. The concern is me sinning by causing someone else to sin. That kind of changes things a little bit. Because it's really a passage about me in relationship to others. It is that my life affects theirs And in some way, I'm being asked to take responsibility for their faith. The second part. If a man has 100 sheep and one goes astray, does he not leave the 99 and go find the one that went astray? How much God cares about every single person. We may sit here this morning secure in our relationship with God, but God's eyes are looking out there to those far off, those who don't know him, person who perhaps has never known God in any way. Might make us think of other parables of lost things over in Luke chapter 15, where you have also the parable of the lost coin and a parable of a lost son who returns home. Except we look closer here, and the parable is introduced with a sentence in verse 10. See that you do not despise one of these little ones. Something is different here from what Jesus was saying in Luke 15. That is, he's telling the same parable for a slightly different purpose. Notice how after this, after where we left off in our reading, it launches into a bit about a brother or a sister in the church sinning against you. And the parable of the sheep here is not talking about non-Christians. It is talking about Christians who have fallen into an error and who have gone astray. That's who the lost sheep is. And the parable also implies something. If God cares so much about someone who has gone astray, who's committed some kind of sin that's led them into error, if he cares so much to go seek them out, shouldn't we have the same heart and be willing to do the same? All of Matthew 18 is about a group of people who care for each other because of Jesus Christ. And so, you know, if we can strip away our sense, our understanding of church and what the church is, if we could go back to the time of Jesus when he is anticipating a period when he's no longer going to be with his disciples, but his disciples are going to want to be together because of Jesus. They love him. They love everything he's about. And so after he's gone, they want to share a common love for Jesus. They want to have a life together that's about what Jesus was about. Loving God, loving each other, getting rid of selfishness to do the best for each other, and show before the world just a different way to be people together. So today, we'll call this the Jesus community, a community where people love God and care about each other. Two chapters from now, there is a story when Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem and he's getting closer. And there comes a time where as he's walking along, there's a great crowd and there are two blind men. And they call out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy." And the crowd around saying, "Shut up. You know, this is a big moment for us. That Jesus has arrived here. We're really excited and you're ruining it because you're making so much noise." And they keep on yelling out, "Have mercy on us, Jesus." And Jesus comes over to them and he asks them, "What is it that you want?" We want our eyes to be open. And Jesus reaches out and touches them. And they can see. And it's a story about a healing, but it's not just about the healing. Do you understand? It's that Jesus even takes note of people who others look at and don't consider being worth much attention. And so for Jesus' disciples, it becomes this question: how do we have a community that reflects the kind of love that we saw Jesus show in moments like that where he reached out to the two blind men? What does it look like to do life together that way? We want to be part of a Jesus community that looks like that. It's important to note about Matthew 18 that the beginning of the chapter, Jesus is telling his disciples to become like little children, and he uses the term little ones. Okay, that there at the beginning obviously means children. Well, when you follow it through the passage, the term little ones morphs in meaning. So it's pretty evident that as he uses it farther on, he's not just talking about little children. Who is he talking about? Could be anyone who is considered small in the community of faith. Could be someone who is weak or vulnerable for some reason. Someone who is looked down on by others. Some way all of us are going to fit into those categories at different times of our lives. There are times where we are more vulnerable than others. And so Matthew 18 is a reminder that we need to take care of the weak and the vulnerable. We don't want to cause them to sin, certainly. And the passage is asking us to take up responsibility for them, just as in the community of faith, we take up responsibility for each other, always. We're in this time of discernment elders. And when we talk about elders in the church, we need to hold up their ministry. To have high expectations and standards for what an elder is to be, that is not a bad thing. If it leads us to being highly critical of them in their ministry, then something clearly has gone wrong. But to esteem that position, to hold it in high regard, that's a good thing. A year or two ago, I was talking with an elder in another church, and he was speaking to me about when he was appointed as an elder in his church, and he said something that is not it's not the first time that I've heard an elder say it, and he said, "When I found out that the church was calling me to be an elder, I felt so humbled." It's not the time to get a big head. It's humbling. Because there's just this understanding that a person is small. And when you come to the task of being an elder, anyone just seems so inadequate to the great ministry of what that's about. It is a big responsibility. And that's a reminder that we need to honor our elders. But it is also right that when we talk about elders, that we let Scripture remind us of the ministry of the whole congregation, a ministry that all of us are a part of. Scripture has much to say about the church as a body of people being responsible for and caring for each other. Again, I just point out that the next passage after where we read, next passage is about when a Christian brother or sister sins against me and how do I deal with that? I go to them, and if they don't listen, then I take someone else. If they still don't listen, I take it to the church. Right? And so note with that, my first step is not, if someone sins against me, I go tell an elder. Okay, there may be a very good place to do that, but the general operating principle is, I go deal with it directly. You know, I have that responsibility. And then also in that passage, the last step is not, once these different measures have failed, that I go to the elders and take it to them. No, it says, I take it to the whole congregation. Whole congregation becomes involved in dealing with a matter of that kind. If you look across the New Testament letters written by Paul, Peter, John, and others, the overwhelming majority deal with really serious situations in churches by talking to whole congregations, not by talking to just leaders. And sometimes, frankly, it's surprising. You know, because you have a situation like in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 where there's a really sexually immoral situation. And we might think, you know, man, you need to take that situation by behind closed doors. But the Apostle Paul, he puts it out there for the Corinthians, says, look, all of us have to deal with this situation. People today have a high sense of ownership for their own lives and their own choices, and there has been so much good that we have seen come out of this. And one of the realities is that people cannot just take for granted today believing in God or being a Christian. Used to, that was possible. Today, uh-uh. I mean, today you have got to own your faith. And yet, we also live in a spectator society where a lot of the times, you know, we just kind of sit back and watch other people do things for us. And one of the consequences is that it can be very easy then in church to sit back and we watch how the elders deal with the situation and we say, oh my goodness, they did that in a really lame way. And church is not a spectator thing, because church is the Jesus community. And the Bible shows members active in shaping the future of the church, not passively watching everything go by. And it just includes understanding that we affect each other. And so we need to watch out for the effect that we have on each other, especially to those who are vulnerable. Because maybe they're spiritually immature, they're weak in their faith for some reason, or they're just at a time in their life where things are really sensitive and delicate. We just need to watch out for them. Sometimes people depending on each other means we lose things. Lose control of some things in our life. Back in 2010, there was a story that captivated people around the world. It was an ongoing story. It involved a group of miners in the country of Chile who had been trapped underground. And so we're all paying attention to this rescue operation that's going on, and how are they doing, and are they going to make it? And they had a way to get supplies down to them. But one of the things was, kind of this rule that was established was they could not have video games, and they could not have music devices that had headphones. And the reason was because those kinds of things isolate individuals from the group. And it was just a time where they couldn't afford that. They needed everybody connected and continually available because of the nature of the situation that they were in. Sometimes being with others means that we lose something of our independence. Right? That's an unavoidable reality. I discovered it when I became a parent. It was very disappointing. But Jesus is the one who called us into this life where we serve each other, watch out for each other, take responsibility for each other. And Jesus never calls us to do something that he does not give us the strength and the ability and the guidance of the Holy Spirit to be able to do. Being the Jesus community together can be frustrating at times, tiring at times, painful at times. There are lots of great stories about wonderful things that happen in community together, about people experiencing redemption and healing in community and growing through the influence of others to be able to do wonderful things for other people. Great stories. But it's not something where we can be overly sentimental, because there are also hard realities about it. Many people in the Catholic Church who become monks and nuns will end up leaving that life, going back to a more regular life in the world. And you think about it, you think about the vows that they take, it's understandable, right? I mean, the vow of poverty, I imagine, could be really difficult to deal with long term. A vow of chastity, imagine that could be a challenge. Maybe that's just me. But actually, they say that it's not those things that are the cause of why people stop being a monk or a nun. It's actually that they have trouble getting along with other monks and nuns that they live with. And knowing what we know about human nature, that shouldn't be too surprising. Jesus calls us into this life. Jesus is telling us that this way of life is one worth living. It is a life filled with mercy and the love of God. It's a life that revels in the stories where Jesus touches others with compassion and we are discovering how we can live that out with each other. It's a life that's an escape from the cynicism and pessimism of the world where we find a new joy as we live with Jesus present among us. It is a life of people taking up their calling from Jesus, not to be spectators, but to encourage each other, challenge each other, lift each other up, correct each other. For those people in Sunday small groups, in the month of March, this is really what we're going to be giving our attention to, is talking about the whole ministry of the congregation that we take up. So February was spent really focusing on the ministry of elders and our discernment about elders. But March, we're thinking about our ministry as a congregation to each other. If you are not part of a small group, let me encourage you to do so. And if you're not sure how to get connected, you can talk to me or call the church office and we will help you get connected. Let's keep this in mind in this time of discernment about elders, that as much as we're attentive in this time to the calling of elders, that we remember the calling that we all have, that Jesus calls us and equips us by his grace to be the Jesus community together. As we think about this morning, I remember a time that I was driving here along 10th. I was coming this direction on 10th. And I'd come to 10th and Linden. I was stopped and I was second in line. And in front of me, there was a guy on a Harley Davidson motorcycle. And he's got the jean jacket that has the sleeves ripped off. And he's got, you know, big heavy black boots. And he's not wearing a motorcycle helmet, but he's got the bandana tied over his head. And I mean, total biker look. Right? And I look across the way, and the first guy in line coming the opposite direction was another motorcyclist, but looked very different. Okay? He's got one of those rocket bikes, you know, race bike, and he's got on the racing leathers and the cool helmet that has the blacked out visor. It's very sleek look. And I was just kind of marveling at how different. You know, they both ride motorcycles, but they represent two very different cultures that have their type of bike and their type of clothing that they wear. And as I was thinking about this, the guy on the Harley Davidson in front of me, I just see him lift up his hand to the guy across the way. And I looked, and sure enough, the guy on the racing bike, he lifts up his hand in response back. And I thought, that's cool. I mean, here you have these two people that are from such different worlds in motorcycle culture, but they're signaling each other, saying to each other, you know, we are both motorcycle riders. We are part of the same larger club. I wondered about that. I wondered if I could start something for people who drive Dodge minivans or... You laugh. What is that telling me? In a few minutes at the Lord's Supper, we eat the bread and we drink the cup And as we do it, we are signaling to each other that we are part of the Jesus community together, the same club. Me looking out for you, you looking out for me, both of us trying to live this life together. Let's stand and sing as we prepare for that.